Okay. We can start. First of all, today we're going to learn the Yeshiva in memory of Tava Bat Elvira. That's El's mother-in-law who passed away a few days ago. Wish the whole family well, and Rishama Shehav Aliyah, and we'll learn Huskus. So last week we did a special shiur on the concept of Yutes Kislev and the whole idea of what Hasidus is and what the Alter Rebbe actually wanted to achieve with Tanya and so on. Safiga Trey is Yutes Kislev, so we should do something for sure, part two. So we're going to take it a little bit further. I mean, it's an independent thing, but we'll take it a little bit further than we did last week. And it's based on this parsha, actually, this week's parsha, which we'll soon see. It was a talk that the Rebbe gave. I'm not sure when he gave it, actually. 1981. But it was printed and edited and published in 1984, I think it was, 85 actually. Just an interesting little thing. This particular sicha, this particular talk that the Rebbe gave, and we'll bring in other things as well, but we'll base it on the sicha. I remember it very well for the following funny reason when it was published. So it used to be when we were in through many years, every week they would publish an edited work from the Rebbe called the sicha, right? Which means when the Rebbe would talk, they would transcribe all these talks, but they printed in volumes and volumes and volumes. They're called hanochas. Hanochas means the unedited talks of the Rebbe. Every week, however, there's a book of edited talks of the Rebbe called the Kutei Sichas. That's the official talks of the Rebbe edited. They would prepare, take from a few years back, they would take either one sicha or a combination of sichas, and they put it together, put footnotes. There's a whole team that worked in it. And then they would give it into the Rebbe at the beginning of the week. The Rebbe would brutally edit it sometimes and send it back and back and forth. And then it would come out Friday afternoon. And in 770, when we were Bochrim, or after I was married, whatever, there was a big buzz on Shabbos. This was like the talk of the week that you studied. You studied Friday night before davening, after davening, Shabbos morning, whatever the case is, and it was always like a big thing. When I went as a Bochur to Australia, or before I went to Yeshiva, but particularly after I spent already a few years at 770 and got used to this, I went in on Shlichus as a Bochur to Melbourne, to YG, and we didn't used to get it, obviously. Everything was by mail in those days. So we used to always get it like a week later or 2 weeks later. We'd have a Thursday night, a group of us, six of us, the shluchim, we would get together, we'd learn the sefer, but it was like 2 weeks old. It wasn't on the parsha anymore. And then came a big invention, which, no, I don't know, before email. I don't know if you know what this is, but a fax machine. You know what a fax machine is? So, fax machine today is a dinosaur. But in those days, fax machine was a big, big, big chiddush. It was amazing, right? And not everyone had fax machines. You had to be a big machete fax machine. So there was one guy in the community, and maybe I've got his first name. His name was Hirsch, I think. But he was a big lawyer, whatever. He had a big law, legal firm, but part of the Chabad community in Melbourne. And we heard that he has a fax machine. So we asked him if he'd mind getting the sicha. We had it arranged that it should be faxed from New York. And that Shabbos, it was this Shabbos, Parshas Hayeshev, in 85 actually. It was, because it was before December. 95, for the first time we got the Sichon Tam, and it was a major buzz. It also was connected to Yitzchak Kislev, and it was beautiful. From then on, we got it every week, but it was really towards the end that we were there. But so I remember the Sichon very well, because we learned it with such passion, because it was like the first time we got the Sichon on time. Anyway, so I'm not going to give you the whole Sichon, but it's a very deep Sichon, but I will give you parts of it, and especially connected to the idea of Yitzchak Kislev. And the Sichon is based on the Parsha and Yitzchak Kislev with the famous concept that the Shaloh HaKadosh, the great Kabbalist, the Shaloh, brings, that every yontif, every event that comes during the week is always connected to the Parsha. So therefore, if Yutes Kislev falls out, which it does in most years, in the Parsha of Vayeshev, it means there's some connection between Vayeshev and Yutes Kislev. Even though those are all events, obviously, after the Parshas were divided, And after people started reading the parasha, as is the case with most Yomim Tovim, most Chagim, Purim, Chanukah, all these things. But the Shalom maintains nothing's by chance, and the fact that we read a parasha on the Shabbos means it's significant for that week. In fact, the Alter Rebbe, who's the subject of Yutes Kislev, famously said the famous line. He once gave out a sort of a line to his Hasidim, "Amadav leben mit der Zeit," which means we have to live with the time. I certainly didn't mean living with modernity, that's for sure. But so the Hasidim didn't understand exactly what he meant by living with the time. So they found out after from his brother, I think it was, that he meant they should live with the parasha of the week. Every day you should live with the parasha of the week, right? No, so up from the beginning of the week till the Shabbos. So now we're in Parshas Vayeshev. This coming week is Parshas Vayeshev, which means the whole week is Parshas Vayeshev, right? As we prepare for Shabbos. I mean, there's a concept of the Parsha having a connection to the week afterwards as well, but this particular idea is we're living in the Parsha every day as we lead up to Shabbos, right? So you ask the question, it's a really strange thing to say that this Parsha is connected with Yutes Kislev, because this Parsha seems to be the exact opposite of Yutes Kislev. Yutes Kislev is about a geula, redemption. Alter Rebbe was released from jail, not only physically, but spiritually. There was a redemption, so to speak, for the Chabad movement, for Hasidus, the whole spreading of the esoterics of Torah, as we spoke about last week. That's Yutes Kislev, right? Vayeshev, the exact opposite. Vayeshev, the whole story of Vayeshev is Yosef being sold down to Golus, and that leading ultimately to the Golus of the Yidden in Mitzrayim. Right? So how does that connect? Yeah. Okay, so obviously, Yosef going down to Mitzrayim was for the purpose of Geula, the purpose of redemption. The whole point was for the Yidden that ultimately to come out of Mitzrayim and to be redeemed from Mitzrayim. That's all true. But nevertheless, it doesn't really gel. In other words, this is really the end of the story, that's the beginning of the story. In other words, right? That's the concept. So therefore, he wants to know what that means. Okay. See, based on a medrash in our parasha, which we found on page, perhaps I'll let me ask him 1 second. Yeah, page 212. Just to give you a bit of context, at the bottom of the page, the first chapter of chapter 29, the first pasuk of chapter 29. So it's interesting that, just to give you context, the way Parshat Vayeshev works is the story of Yosef, his dreams. Yaakov sends him to see what's happening with his brothers. He comes to his brothers as they were shepherding the sheep. They take this opportunity. They throw him into the pit. Reuven actually wants to come back and save him, but it's too late because he went and he came back, and it was too late because they had sold him down to Egypt with a bunch of merchants, right? That's the thing. And then at that point, the parsha interrupts itself with a whole other story about Yehuda, Yehuda's marriage, Yehuda and Tamar. Very complex story, but it's a story of Mashiach, actually. Right? It's a story of ultimately Mashiach being born, because he married one wife, but then he eventually married Tamar, who was really his daughter-in-law, through the concept of Yibum, and he has twins, and one of the twins is Peretz, and Peretz, of course, is the ancestor of Mashiach. Okay. When it finishes that story, it goes back to the story of Yosef, right? And it says the following words. It goes back to the history, and now goes back to what happens with Yosef in Mitzrayim. But it starts with the following three words, and it says, "The Yosef hurad Mitzrayim." Right? Yosef was taken down to Mitzrayim. Yeah. Now, of course, that phrase in itself is a very golus phrase. Well, Yosef, the great Yosef, the tzaddik Yosef, the dedicated son Yosef, was taken down to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim wasn't just physical slavery or physical capture, also was a spiritual yirida, spiritual descent, because Mitzrayim was known, even at that time, Mitzrayim was known to be ervas ha'aretz, the immorality of the earth. They were very, very immoral people, terrible people, evil people, and that was Mitzrayim. So Yosef hurad Mitzrayim, Yosef was taken down, the ultimate descent. However, there's a fascinating medrash. Medrash says that by Yosef hurad Mitzrayim, the word hurad, can actually mean something else. Hurad means, there's a pasuk in Tehillim actually talking about Mashiach, when Mashiach will come, it says Mashiach will be a ruler. He will rule. And it says in Tilim, V'yerd, same word as Hurad, same Shoresh, same root, V'yerd miyom el yom. He will rule from one ocean to the next. Basically, will rule very expansively, right? So there, the Shoresh, the root of the word Hurad, actually means to rule, to be in control of, to conquer, right? And the Midrash says it. The Midrash says, V'yosef Hurad Mitzrayim, Kafshun, which means he conquered Mitzrayim. He led Mitzrayim. He sholat ben, he controlled and ruled over Mitzrayim. Right? That's what the Midrash says. Which, of course, is really strange. What does that mean? He didn't. He came down to Mitzrayim. He was captured in Mitzrayim. Right? So on a very simple level, it means Yosef went down to Mitzrayim. That's the simple shot. But eventually it led to Yosef leading Mitzrayim. Correct? Which happens in two parashas from now. Or, no, next week's parasha, right? He becomes the viceroy of Egypt. So he's actually ruling Mitzrayim. It's true. He was second in command and he actually ran Mitzrayim for all practical purposes. Yeah? That's on a simple level what the Medrash probably means. But the Rebbe points out it doesn't really completely fit because it's on this pasuk. And we know when there's two, the Rebbe has a thesis and it's a very, very, there's like a few fundamental themes and rules that go through all the Rebbe's talks. One of them is that when you have different interpretations of the same pasuk, they're connected. Because they're interpreting the same pasuk, therefore they must be connected, even though there are different interpretations, right? Okay. So therefore it says, V'yosef hurad Mitzrayim, it can't only be that he went down to Mitzrayim now, but eventually it means he's going to rule. There must be that this pshat applies now also. And somehow the two things live together. He was taken down to Mitzrayim and he rules Mitzrayim at the same time. What does that mean? Okay. So, goes back to Yutis Kislev. It goes back and forth now, Yutis Kislev and Tepart V'Yeshu. So one of the themes of Yutis Kislev, in fact, one of the things, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but there's a pasuk in Tehillim that's very strongly connected to the idea of Yutis Kislev. It's in chapter 55 of Tehillim. It's when David HaMelech was fighting against enemies, especially his own son, Avshalom. And then he was redeemed and the whole thing. He says, Poda b'shalom nafshi. My soul was redeemed in peace. Right? Because it's a whole pasuk. Yeah. In fact, there's a whole song to those words, and that's the song always sung in Yutis Kislev. And we find that the Rebbe's Rabbeim of Chabad, each, there are three of them particularly, that had redemptions, right, in different ways. The Alter Rebbe and the Mittler Rebbe, the second one, he also was incarcerated for some sort of libel against him, and then he was released on the 10th of Kislev. And the Friedrich Rebbe, we know the Friedrich Rebbe famously set in jail under communism Russia, and so on. And they're all somehow connected to this pasuk of Pata B'Shalom Nafshi. Why? So when Alter Rebbe wrote a letter after he sat in jail, right, and he came out, he wrote a letter, I think it's a letter to Lev Yitzchak Abardishev. And in it, he writes about the great miracle that happened to him and he was released and so on. And he says that on the Tuesday, because it happened on a Tuesday, right, on the Tuesday, like this year, right, on the Tuesday, he says, Kesha Karisi Batehilim, when I was reading Tehillim, and I came to the pasuk Pada B'Shalom Nafshi, Koydem Shehischalti Pasuk Shela Akarav, before I started the next pasuk, I was released. Punkt at that pasuk. Now, why was he reading Pada B'Shalom Nafshi? Why was he reading that pasuk? So we know that Tehillim is said in different ways. One way that, a common way of saying Tehillim, is that Tehillim is divided among the days of the month. Right? I wasn't reading it for that reason, because if you divide Tehillim among the days of the month, the pasuk Pada B'Shalom Nafshi comes out on the 10th of the month. Right? This was the 19th, of course. But there's another way that Tehillim is divided between the days of the week. There are some people that finish Tehillim all week, because you look in Tehillim, you'll see, I mean, Tehillim is divided into five books, but it's also divided into seven parts. The Yom Rishon, the Yom Sheni, that you say every day if you want to say a lot of Tehillim, right? For a reason, whatever. There's a concept of saying Tehillim as it's divided among the week. And especially when the Alter Rebbe was in jail, he made it a point of saying extra Tehillim and therefore saying Tehillim according to days of the week, and according to days of the week, chapter 55 falls out on Tuesday, and therefore he was reading that pasuk. Okay. The Mittler Rebbe, the second Rebbe, he didn't come out on Tuesday, but he came out on the 10th of the month, which is has the pasuk shalom. And the Friedrich Rebbe was released on Tuesday also. So also got the pasuk. It actually goes further than that, because the Rebbe didn't mention that, but 12th of Tammuz. But it was a Tuesday that year. Yeah. So also connected with part of Shalom Rashi. No, because each of them said Ma'amorim, connected with that pasuk on the days connected to the redemption. The truth is it goes further than that, because the Rebbe never sat in jail, our Rebbe, but he went through a very difficult time with his books, with the Sfarim of the previous Rebbe, well-known thing. And when it was going through, the time he connected it. It was a very fascinating sicha. That the whole thing was a court case in America. It was a very famous story, right? And the Rebbe connected it with the same reason Alter Rebbe sat in jail. Now Alter Rebbe sat in jail. We said this last week that there was because there was some kitruk, there was some spiritual accusation of what was happening, and therefore the remedy for that was the Magid and Baal Shem Tov. When they appeared to the Alter Rebbe, told him, "When you come out, you have to do even more. You have to spread Chassidus even more, and so on and so forth." And the Rebbe compared to that to what was going on with the Sfarim, that he told the Hasidim, while the court case was happening, that there was also a kitrug. There was a kitrug that Hasidim aren't doing enough, they're not active enough, because that's what the other side said, that the library is dormant, no one's using it, and Chabad's not that active. And he said, of course, Chabad is very active, but now means we have to be even more active, right? And he connected it with the concept of also going through the spiritual accusation. And the verdict, and therefore the festival that we celebrate, the Sfarim, is Hey Tevis, the 5th of Tevis, and the first time it happened was also Tuesday. So it's also connected with the Lady part of Shalom Rashi. Okay. Now, what's the idea? The idea is that you can have a Geula, you can overcome a struggle in three ways. So, the way the three ways work, the best way to understand it, the Rebbe speaks about this in many times. Oh, sorry. Also, the fact that the Alter Rebbe was released on a Tuesday, right? So we say it's got to do with the idea of Shalom, peace. And it's also got to do with the idea of Tuesday. Tuesday, of course, is the third day, right? So what do we find at the very beginning of creation? This is the Rebbe doesn't talk about this sikh, he talks about other sikhs. What do we find in the creation of the world? We find like this. That we find that the first 3 days went like this. First day, you know, every day Hashem said Ki Tov, it was good, right? But what happened the first day? The first day we know that Hashem was alone in the world, which means there was no opposition to Hashem, so to speak, right? The famous Rashi in Bereshit says that Vayera Vayibok, in each day of the 6 days it says it was evening, it was morning, 1 day, 2 days, the second day, third day. But the first day it says Vayera Vayibok, it was evening, it was morning, Yom Echad, 1 day. After that it says second day, third day. So really on the first day it should have says Yom Rishon, not Yom Echad, right? Says Rashi, why does it say Yom Echad, not Yom Rishon? Because Hashem was Yochid Bo'elome. He was one in his world. There was no creation, there was a world, but he was the only existence in the only revealed existence even in the world, because even the Malachim, even the angels were not created till Monday, right? And everything else was created after. So therefore Hashem was one, truly one in his universe, right? Okay. So that's day one. Day two, there's conflict. That's why it doesn't say Kitov on Monday. Why? Hashem separates the waters to the upper waters and the lower waters, right? Now, the truth is, not just about the waters. What did he do? He created a rakia, he created a heaven that should divide between the waters, right? Now, actually, the division between the waters on day one and day two is actually much deeper than just the waters. In Hasidus, we talk about the idea of waters being the idea of taino, pleasure, deriving pleasure from something. Because in Tanya, the very beginning, it says, Ki'amayim matzmichim kol minei tainuk. Water feeds everything that's pleasurable. How can you have fruit or anything that grows comes from water? Actually, I mean, you need water to make it happen. Therefore, water is a symbol of pleasure. When Hashem created the division between the lower waters and the upper waters, and the lower waters were upset, it says in the Medrash. They said, we want to be also close to Hashem. And Hashem promised the lower waters that the water ultimately would be used for a mitzvah, like it was used for pouring water on sukkahs, and there was always salt on the Mizbeach, which comes from the ocean. and so on and so forth. But there was this division. What does it mean, division between the lower waters and the upper waters? It means that Hashem made a big divide between the physical pleasure and the spiritual pleasures. That the lower waters represent physical pursuit, which are completely separate and divided off from the high upper waters, which are spiritual pursuit. What's dividing them? What's dividing them is that heaven, that expanse, whatever you call it, right? Okay. But because division was created, and with that came the whole idea of machlokes and all that division, the idea of conflict, gevura basically, was Monday. Therefore, there was no ki toiv on Monday, right? In other words, if there's no ki toiv, it means, right? It means that there's something wrong. It's a negative, right? Division isn't a good thing, right? Now, so what happens? So what do you do when division isn't a good thing? Presumably, you take away the division. So there was a rakia, there was a division between the upper waters and the lower waters. Came Tuesday, Hashem didn't take away the division. And yet on Tuesday, it's ki toif twice. Right? It's ki toif twice. What's up, Shav? Shav's like this. When we say the idea of shalom, peace, what is true peace? So there's three ways this can happen. One way is the first day. First day means, of course, first day there was complete peace. Why? Because there was no opposition. That's not really peace. Right? That's just... because there's no opposition, so there's no peace, right? Person can lock themselves up and can be never interact with people, and it's fine, he'll have a very peaceful life. And you'll say, but you won't say he was a man of peace, because never made peace, right? Okay. The second thing that can happen is the number two. What's number two? Number two represents conflict. But there's conflict. Second day, there's a conflict, there's a schism between the Gashmius and the Ruchnius, the physical and the spiritual, the upper waters, the lower waters, right? Okay. What's the ultimate? The ultimate is not to get rid of the enemy. The ultimate is to transform the enemy. To bring the enemy along with the ride. To transform and let the enemy, so to speak, the opposition, the resistance, become part of the solution. So what does Tuesday represent? It represents that Hashem didn't want to resolve the conflict between the spiritual and the physical by getting rid of the physical, but by elevating the physical and making it part of joining it together. Not joining it together as equals, but joining it together as being transformative, as the Gashmi is coming along and revealing the upper waters within the lower waters. In other words, like Hashem told the lower waters, I'll take you, you'll learn to be a mitzvah, you'll become a mitzvah. Will be by eating a meal on Shabbos, by using the Gashmis to give tzedakah, whatever the case is, but by elevating the world to follow and become the friends of the Torah, of the upper waters. That's peace. That's true peace, right? And for somehow with the Geula of the Alter Rebbe and the Mittler Rebbe and the Friedrich Rebbe, there's this idea, this emphasis that the Geula took place, and especially with the Alter Rebbe, because we're talking about Yitzchak Kislev, that this was idea as Shalom. In fact, the Alter Rebbe writes that the miracle of Yitzchak Kislev, he says, was created in amazement among the officers and the dignitaries of the country. In other words, they themselves were sort of, they didn't begrudgingly let the Alter Rebbe out, they actually agreed to it afterwards. And in fact, it was an amazing miracle because the presumption was that when the Alter Rebbe is redeemed from prison, he was going to be given very restricted movement and where he can teach, where he can't teach, where he can live, where he can't live. And he wasn't, he was given carte blanche, he could do whatever he wanted. No, you know, like this, the transformation takes place in a symbolic way and partial way. The true transformation will take place when Mashiach comes, right? No, not all the Jews are transformed, not all the Jews came on board. But the concept was, it was done in a way that symbolized the process of Shalom, right? So I'll just bring it out in two different ways before we get to the Parsha. Off my train of thought, something I want to share with you. Give me 1 second. No, that's okay. It's okay. Before the niggle, I wanted to. Yeah, doesn't matter. So that's the concept. We find this when Mashiach comes, a very interesting pasuk. It says like this: Mashiach will come, will be the ultimate shalom, the ultimate geula. It says, "V'niglo kvoid Hashem, that when Mashiach comes, the glory of Hashem will be revealed in the whole world. So the whole world will see Hashem, correct? Then the pasuk continues, V'ro'u kol basar yachtav, and all flesh will be able to see, ki pi Hashem diber, that Hashem has spoken. So the question is asked, why do you need the second part of the pasuk? If you say v'nigla kvayd Hashem, that the glory of Hashem will be revealed, that's enough. It's obvious, we'll see Hashem. I mean, that's what it is, right? There'll be no opposition, correct? Why does it have to continue and say v'ro'u kol basar yachtav? That all flesh will see. It's a pshat like this. Again, the same three things. Now, before Mashiach comes, okay, there's glimpses of Mashiach, like Shlomo HaMelech says like that, the Geula, Vitas Kislev, all these things are glimpses of what it means, the concept of Shalom, but we don't have proper Shalom. We have conflict between Gashmis and Ruchnis. Okay. But what could happen is that Hashem could suddenly reveal himself, which will happen when Mashiach comes, right? But revealing himself can happen in two ways. Hashem could reveal himself, and the whole world will just fall in line, because they're overwhelmed. It's almost like dissolving.
But not transforming,
exactly. So it's not enough that Mashiach comes, v'niglo kvayd Hashem. Obviously, that's how it begins. It's a revelation of Hashem. But the pasuk continues to tell us it's a revelation of Hashem, not ignoring the world, and not that the world just goes into submission because it can't oppose because it's such a revelation, right? But the world transformed, and that's why the pasuk continues, v'ro'u kol basar yachtov. V'ro'u kol basar yachtov. The flesh will see. The very enemy itself, the opposition itself, the goof, the body, the world, will see godliness, will be transformed to see godliness, right? In other words, suddenly, godliness and the world become one. Yeah? How does that happen? This is the important part. How does that happen? It happens because, let's go back to creation. The first day there was a revelation of Hashem. But the revelation of Hashem was a revelation. Darkness is a contradiction to revelation. Therefore, on the second day, when suddenly the darkness emerges, when the physicality emerges, and there's conflict, the conflict opposes, resists the revelation. Like this world. This world is a place of darkness, which resists the revelation of God. That's why it's a machloikas, right? In order to bring them together, which, by the way, began at Matan Torah, but it'll be absolutely trying to happen when Mashiach comes, in order to bring them together, it needs a revelation of such a light, of the essence of Hashem, such a powerful revelation of Hashem that actually is not light. It's something greater than light and darkness. Something completely transcendent, which is the essence of Hashem. Who's not defined by light, is not defined by darkness, is not defined by anything. He is everything, but he's nothing. He's undefined, right? So it's the highest form, the greatest and essential revelation, which then can combine both things together. Which is why Tuesday is Tiferes. It says about the Sefirot, it's Chesed, it's Gvura, Tiferes. Tiferes, the middle, goes all the way up to the essence of Hashem. The power to combine both. Right? Now. Let's go back now to Yosef. Okay? And then we'll go back to the Alter Rebbe again. The way the Rebbe explains it in the Sikha. So, there were three groups of people who interacted with Mitzrayim. Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim. Right? Yosef's brothers, the Shvatim, and Yosef himself. And Al-Pi Kabbalah, we'll see how they all interacted with Mitzrayim differently. The brothers, when they came down to Mitzrayim, they specifically asked that they don't want to be distracted by the physicality of Mitzrayim. So they asked to be shepherds, to be away, to escape. Right? Be away from the... I mean, they lived in the world, but in the world, to be away from the world. Right? The Ovos, it says, Yaakov Avinu. Actually, it didn't matter to him where he was. We'll see why in a minute. Because wherever he was like Chai the Mitzrayim. Yosef lived in Mitzrayim. Not just lived geographically in Mitzrayim, he was steeped in Mitzrayim. Yeah? How does that work? So it works like this. The Shvatim, so again, remember there's three things. There's war, there's conflict, there's light that just overwhelms the enemy, and then there's the coming together where the enemy is transformed. Yeah? The Shvatim represented the idea of conflict. Why? Because on their level, somewhere in a subtle way, world was a problem for them. They knew if they live in the world, they'll struggle. And they don't want to struggle spiritually. They wanted to be okay. They wanted to remain pure. In other words, what level of revelation do they represent where there's a conflict between them and the world? It's like the Monday. Right? And therefore, the only way they could deal with it was to escape. So in other words, the world, they didn't ignore the world, actually, because the world, they were what we call a Hasidus, they were represented a level that is higher than the world but has a relationship with the world, which is why there's a conflict. It's a more tzimtzum sort of revelation, where it has a connection to it. It's not completely transcendent. It's actually connected to the world on some level and therefore can clash with the world. The world matters. It's toifas makim, but it actually can distract them. That's the brothers. Yaakov is different. Yaakov is the ovos. It says in like this. It says in Hasidus that the brothers belong to the world of Bria. You know, there's Atzilus, Bria, Tzirasia. They belong to the world of Bria. Now, Bria, we know, is already part of the creation. It's a very high part of the creation. But it's already after Big Tzimtzum, right? It's not Hashem's world. It's already part of the creation, the divine creation, the spiritual creation, but it's part of the creation. And therefore, the world can really interfere. The Ovos, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they were just totally transcendent. They belong to the world of Atzilus, where there's only one reality for them, which means they could actually live in the world and it wouldn't make a difference. Why would it make a difference? Because there's no world for them. It doesn't affect them. Because wherever they are, they're transcendent. They're the world of Atzilus.
Sunday.
Sorry?
Sunday,
exactly. Oy, that's like the Sunday. So it's peace. It's not conflict, but it's not real peace either. Because there's no enemy. Why? Because enemy doesn't exist. It's there, but it's insignificant. Yosef is the highest madrega. Because what it says about when it talks about Atzilus and Bria, it says Yosef could take Yaakov and bring it down to Bria, which means he could bring Atzilus into Bria. What does that mean? Yosef didn't ignore the world. Yosef transformed the world. Yosef hurad Mitzrayim. Yosef came down to Mitzrayim, and he interacted with Mitzrayim. He was in the dungeons of Mitzrayim. He was really in Mitzrayim. Then he became the viceroy of Mitzrayim. He lived in Mitzrayim, not just geographically. He lived there. He actually interacted with Mitzrayim. And he's the only one known as Yosef HaTzadik. Because he was able to reveal such a light that the world doesn't distract. The world's not ignored and overwhelmed. The world as a world can also become a long part of godliness. The way the Rebbe puts it is to him, you know, we talk about the idea of the world being bottle, the world being nothingness towards Hashem, right? We learned this in Tanyim, in Perek chapter 20, chapter 21, right? The world is part of Hashem's reality. But there's different ways that can happen. By the Shvatim, by the tribes, the world wasn't completely bottle for them because the world had some sort of significance for them. That's why it would distract. Yaakov, the world is just nothing. But then it's not true peace because at the level where the world becomes something, it hasn't been transformed yet. To Yosef, the world was so nothing that it could be and it exists and we can interact with it, and it's still all godliness. Why? Because Yosef was able to reveal that transcendent, essential light of Hashem, which would then transform and combine the Ruchnis and the Gashmis. Right? That's the Pshat in the Parsha. That's the Pshat of the Medrash. Yosef hurad Mitzrayim. Yosef was taken down to Mitzrayim, and Yosef controlled Mitzrayim. Not only when he became viceroy, from day one, spiritually speaking. Which means both interpretations happened at one time, because it's the ultimate shalom. He went into Mitzrayim, he was taken down, he went down the level. He went all the way down, he interacted with the lowest level of existence, the lowest level of Mitzrayim, and yet controlled it and transformed it at the same time. Hurad and Hurad. Two pshatim, coming together. Right? Now, let's go back to Yutis Kislev and go back to what we spoke about last week. Same idea. On different levels, but same concept, right? The Baal Shem Tov revealed the Emunah of Yid, right? This is we spoke about this last week at length. And even by the most simplest of Jews, had the ability, after the Baal Shem Tov revealed it and exposed it, to really let his Emunah and his faith burst forward, right? What's Emunah? Emunah is a clarity that transcends the rationale of the person. Transcends intellect, transcends seichel, right? It's the depth of the neshama. When a Yid connected to the Baal Shem Tov lived a full life of Torah mitzvahs because his Emunah had been revealed, when that Emunah shone and Emunah exploded, it's like the first day of creation. Because it's such a strong light, that it ignores the rationale. When the Yechidah B'Nefer and the Pintel Yid, we learned this in Tanya in chapter 19 and so on, right? When the Pintel Yid when it explodes, so there's absolute clarity. There's absolute clarity that Hashem is one and Hashem is the only being, etc., etc., Torah mitzvahs. But not because I've understood it, because it's actually higher than understanding. It doesn't actually come into understanding. By definition, it's something that transcends the human mind, human intellect. Right? It might mean that you're totally on board. There's no resistance anymore. It's part of a shalom, but not real shalom. Because when your human mind makes a comeback, it's going to fight back. Oh, but this doesn't make sense. This doesn't feel right. This is too hard. Right? Why? Because the human intellect and the human mind and the human faculties and the human consciousness has been anesthetized, that's all. So that's symbolic of the first day of creation, where there's such a light that anything that exists doesn't get in the way. The Alter Rebbe's Chiddush was different. That was the idea of Chabad, as we spoke about last week. The Alter Rebbe's Chiddush was that he brought down such a deep level of Torah that he took something that is by definition higher than understanding, and rather than it overwhelming the understanding, he brought it down into the understanding. Understand? He brought it into the understanding. Today it's such an obvious thing because we learn Chassidim, we learn Tanya, but actually what the Alter Rebbe did was actually a revolution. Complete revolution. And it's something that actually doesn't even make sense. To take something that is a munna and is by definition transcending of the mind, and yet to bring it into the mind is two things coming opposite together. And it only happened because he was able to reveal a deeper level in Torah. In the pnimius of Torah, in the essence of Torah, in the esoterics of Torah, that could actually bring together the supraconscious with the conscious, the higher, the emunah with the seichel. Right? Interesting, there's a famous thing with the Baal Shem Tov. By the way, and it wasn't in conflict with the Baal Shem Tov, on the contrary, it was a continuation of the Baal Shem Tov. The Rebbe Rashab writes about Yutes Kislev. He writes a beautiful letter about Yutes Kislev, calling it the Rosh Hashanah of Chassidus, and a whole bunch of different expressions. And he says at the end, the he Torah of Baal Shem Tov. This is the Baal Shem Tov. Now, the Baal Shem Tov, stage one, he revealed the Emunah. Now, the Rebbe's Chiddush was, he took that Emunah and he brought it into the mind. Right? Baal Shem Tov once wrote a letter to his brother-in-law, Rebbe Gershon Kitteve. You know, it was known that Baal Shem Tov, when he would daven, he would have Aliyah Sanashama. His neshama would leave his body, and he would explore the higher worlds. Right? I'm not quite sure what that means. I've never experienced it, so I can't tell you. But But he writes that it was Rosh Hashanah and he was davening, and he had Aliyas and Hashanah, and his Hashanah went so high that it came to the Heichal HaMashiach, the parlor of Mashiach, up there. I don't know what that means. Mashiach has an office somewhere in Gan Eden. I don't know exactly what that means. He came to the Heichal HaMashiach, and he said to the Mashiach, famous words, he said to Mashiach, Eimasai ka'osi mar, when is the master coming? Like, when are you showing up, right? And he says, Mashiach told him, L'chashiyafutsu ma'inosecha chutzah, when the wellsprings of your teachings will be spread out to the very outside. The part of the letter that's not so famous is that Baal Shem Tov writes to his brother-in-law, he says, V'nitzta'arti, and I was in pain. Kanu is going to take a long time. Okay. Okay, whatever that means. But what's the pshat? So the Rebbe always would explain like this. You have a spring, right? Now, the Baal Shem Tov revealed a spring. He revealed that Amunah, that essence, that the essential connection between the Yid and the Eibishter. Now, the spring can sprout off water, and someone 10 miles away, you could drink the water that's coming from the spring. But that water 10 miles away is not the spring. It's water from the spring. That's not what Mashiach said. Mashiach said, L'chashiyafutsu ma'inosecha chutzah, when the spring will be taken to the outside world. The spring itself. So the spring is the Amunah, right? The spring doesn't normally go outside. The spring stays where the spring is. But the spring is a representation of that Amunah. The idea of taking the spring to the outside started with the Alter Rebbe. That's what the Rebbe always explains. Previous Rebbe explained. Yeah? Because the Alter Rebbe started this process of taking the Amunah and bringing it to where the Amunah doesn't belong, which began with the human mind, seichel, understanding, chabad, chochmah bin hadas. But actually it continued on, because the Mittel Rebbe took understanding much to a much greater level, and Chassidus exploded. And then we find that what the Rebbe did, and this is why the sikh is such a fundamental concept, the Rebbe said that now, the Friedrich Rebbe started this already, not just taking it to the outside in terms of the human mind, but taking it to the outside of the world. Started with the previous Rebbe, but really came with the Rebbe, bringing down Elikus, bringing the spring, the actual spring, the Munna, the Chassidus, the understanding of Chassidus, so on and so forth, to the far-flung corners of the earth. This that the Rebbe began the whole thing of Shlichus and going to every part of the world, that's not a separate campaign. It's a continuation of Chitus Kislev. It's just the final stages of the chutzah, of taking the spring to the outside world. But what that also means is that we who have to execute that mission, we have to be a Yosef, not the Shvatim and not Yaakov. Right? In other words, we can't be a Yaakov by ignoring the world, and we can't be a Shvatim by the world distracting us either. We have to have the ability of Yosef on some minute level of living in the world and the world not being a distraction. On the contrary, be able to Hurad Mitzrayim, to control the world, to transform the world. It's not simple, right? Those sometimes make a mistake, and I think that the Rebbe gave, you know, up until, in Tanya talks about how the world is nothing, and all the Chassidus talks about that, and the Rebbe suddenly gave the world prominence. That's not true. Actually, the world is more nothing now, as an independent existence. That's why it doesn't distract. Yosef didn't distract it because it's mamash nothing. It's only a lukus. It's a what. But it's all godliness. You can be in the world and interact with the world and be in the politics of the world and everything like that, but it's all for one purpose only. It doesn't distract, because it's, as an independent existence, it actually doesn't exist. And that's the Yosef, and that's why you can transform it, because it so doesn't distract you. Not like a Shvatim, which would distract them if they would live there, which means somehow on some level has some importance as an independent thing, right? No, but the Yosef, it doesn't. He was hired there. Brought us such a high light that no, there's nothing else besides Hashem, and therefore even being in the world doesn't distract. But all of this is a very big chiddush, because it's really no safachim, it's two opposites coming together. Yeah? Okay. I'll leave it there. It is a challenge. The opportunity, not the challenge.